And now another no-brainer money-saving tip from Progressive.
Marcus, what happened?
I was changing my oil and I spilled some on the floor.
Oh, well, use these $50 bills to wipe it up.
Perfect. Got any more?
Yeah, take a couple hundred.
Stop. Instead of using money, use an old rag. And here's a better tip from Progressive on how not to waste money. Don't pay too much for car insurance. Drivers who switch and save could save hundreds. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary.
Hey, listeners, while you're thinking of it, I have a free training on demand replay. It's a case study of how I found my calling and landed my dream job in a step-by-step process that I want to share with you. You can find it at thecallingcourse.com/training. That's thecallingcourse.com/training. Go ahead and go to that URL right now and opt in, whether you're on mobile, on desktop, so that you can have that for reference later. So excited to share this training with you. Vanessa Van Edwards is a recovering awkward person, her words, not mine, and an introvert who's on a mission to help everyone learn how to engage, interact, and lead with authenticity and genuine engagement. What that actually means is that she's teaching people how to interpret and use the many verbal and non-verbal cues that often go unnoticed so that you can feel more at ease and in control of how you show up in relationships, in conversations, in speaking engagements, in your leadership, and all of your life. It's really fun stuff. I'm very into it. I've learned a lot from her already that I've begun putting into practice, as I talk about with her in the interview. Vanessa is the lead investigator at Science of People. She is the best-selling author of Captivate, The Science of Succeeding with People. More than 50 million people have watched her YouTube tutorials and TED Talk. She works with entrepreneurs, growing businesses, and trillion-dollar companies, and has been featured all over the web. She's prolific and fantastic. More than anything, what I love about Vanessa is how she practices what she preaches. She's warm, engaging, and just a fantastic communicator. I loved this conversation, and I think that you will too. This is, of course, the Meaning Movement Podcast, a show about work worth doing. So if you're looking to level up your life, your income, your career, you're in the right place. Go ahead and hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening. Leave us a rating and review while you're there. Today with guest Vanessa Van Edwards. Stay with us. Can you imagine waking up on Monday mornings excited about your day? Can you imagine loving being asked the question, "So, what do you do?" I created the Calling Course with a single goal in mind, to create a resource for finding what's next. The Calling Course is based on the process I developed through working with people around the big career transitions that we all go through. I went so far as to get a master's degree in psychology and culture to bring this concept to life, and I'd like to invite you to consider joining us. If you've ever felt stuck, if you've ever felt uncertain of what's next, if you've ever felt like you want more from your work, but you're not sure how to get it, I made this for you. Join us. Get started for free today with a mini course called 5 Clues to Your Calling at thecallingcourse.com. I'll see you there. Vanessa, I am so excited to have you here with us. Welcome to the Meaning Movement Podcast.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
The question I like to begin with is, how do you begin to talk about the work that you do in the world?
Oh, this is easy. I must say right off the bat, the way I like to talk about my work is I'm a recovering awkward person. So I have never found communication to be very easy. I've always struggled with social skills. I struggle with some social anxiety. And the very beginning of my career journey, I realized that I had to catch up my social skills, that if I did not know how to communicate well, there was no way that people were going to believe me or be interested in my ideas. And so what grounds me in my work is helping my fellow recovering awkward folks. If you've ever felt awkward, you are not alone, giving you some really practical tools that you can use. And also for my fellow introverts, On People Skills and Communication was written by extroverts. And the underlying feeling I had when I read those books was you have to fake being an extrovert, that to be liked, to be charismatic, you have to fake it till you make it, you have to pretend to be outgoing. And that just never felt authentic to me. So I also would share that for my introverts, you can be charismatic without having to be extroverted. You can be heard without being loud. And so that's what grounds all my work.
I love it. It's such a great place to start. I'm also a fellow recovering awkward person. You're in good company. I blame it on the fact that I was homeschooled and at some point kind of realized that like I need to figure out how to relate to people because those social skills were harder for me to gain, I guess, naturally.
Yes.
And so I guess I'm just such a fan of the work that you're doing. So I have your book right here, which we'll get to and we'll talk about. And I was like, I wish I had this book like 15, 20 years ago. That would have been like so helpful.
Me too, friend. You know, a funny kind of side story is that, so one of the, I think that it's interesting to talk about what makes us awkward, right? And how our awkwardness dresses up. And everyone has their awkwardness. It shows up in different ways. Some people, they feel awkward. They feel that seed of not belonging, doubt, worry, fear, and it makes them hide. It closes them up. It makes them inhibit, makes them go quiet. Other people feel that seed of awkwardness and it makes them go loud. It makes them show off. It makes them be dramatic. It makes them get angry. And so one thing that I noticed for me is my awkwardness makes me confused. So what was happening to me, you mentioned 15 years ago, my story starts, I think, right around that same time, is I noticed I was misinterpreting neutral cues as negative. So I would be in an interaction and think, oh, she hates me. Oh my gosh, I sound so dumb. He doesn't like me. And I would get in my own head when actually they were sending me totally neutral cues, but I was misinterpreting them as negative. And that created so much confusion where I would leave an interaction or I would leave an interaction and overthink it. Oh, why did I say that? I should have done that. Or before an interaction, I would have so much dread and anxiety that I wouldn't be able to sound smart, that I wouldn't be able to pitch my ideas, that I wouldn't be able to show up as my best self. And so all that confusion, I needed a system. And that's a crazy thing to say about human behavior because I know humans are very complicated, but I literally needed a system. I needed a blueprint. I needed a cheat sheet. I wanted flashcards for like, here's what I say. Here's what I do with my hands. And so for those learners, if you have confusion or you just feel like you don't have control over your social interactions or communication, I think that there is a different way to do it, which is having a system for our communication.
I love it. What's so, I guess, ironic about it is it feels like just to zoom out of this conversation and say, I'm going to present to you a system of this checklist that you can use to be engaging and all these. It sounds like the outcome of that would be like really stiff and robotic. But it's actually 100% the opposite, which is just so surprising about the whole thing.
Yes, you're right. So I think, actually, let's talk about robotic, the robotic sort of stiff, stoic.
Robotism.
Robotism. Whoa, we're creating words today. So let's talk about this because this is one direction that people will go in their awkwardness, which is, I don't know what cues to send and I don't know what cues are being sent to me. So I'm going to send no cues at all. So you'll notice a lot of people who are very smart have amazing book smarts and intelligence will go stoic. It's like they think if I don't show any emotion at all, I can't get in trouble for my emotion. So what happens is you'll have very smart people who become robotic because they don't know what to do. The confusion is causing them to go cold. The problem is under expressing, under cueing is in itself a cue. We actually know that when someone goes mute or goes cold, that is a sign of either nervousness, deception, or shame. Liars often go mute because they're saying a lie, right? So they rehearse their lie, but they make their body and their expressions go completely mute because they haven't practiced that part. So when someone who's incredibly intelligent, but they're delivering to us in a robotic way, our brain goes, wait a minute, what are they stifling? What are they hiding?
What's wrong this here?
What's wrong here? It triggers alarm bells. That's what happened to me is in my confusion, I under-emoted. So I tried to be as cold and stoic as possible because I thought, oh, my ideas can speak for me. But actually what was happening is I was lessening my credibility because I wasn't showing mm-hmm. enough cues. We need cues mm-hmm. to be able to connect with someone. So I think that having a system can actually free you to be more authentic because you know which cues you like and which you don't. You know, there are 96 cues in the book, and some of them you're going to hate. Some of them you're going to be like, no freaking way, Vanessa, am I going to do that cue? Okay, cool. Yeah. That's like a food allergy. That's like, if you think of it like food, and I like to have everything like food because why not make that a metaphor, right? If we have 96 ingredients to make our recipes and you have some allergies, some that you just do not like, it's like, I don't like cilantro. Oof, that is like a food allergy to me. I have cues that I just do not use. Okay. There's going to be cilantro for you in the book too. Then there's going to be cues where you're like, yep, these are my staples. These are my go-to. I do these naturally. Oh, great. I didn't even realize that doing that naturally is going to work. Great. That's your rice, your favorite food. You're going to use it a lot. And then there's going to be a couple. The middle is like, I wonder what that would taste like. Maybe that would add some flavor. Maybe that would add some spice. So the reason I think having a system works because you can safely try each food with a little bit of like a dash. Well, I can see if I like that flavor. That is charisma, right? Like highly charismatic people have different flavors of charisma. It would be very weird if we all had the same recipe. Steve Jobs has a very different charisma than Oprah. Oprah has a very different charisma than Ted Lasso. They're all charismatic. I would say Ted Lasso, Oprah, and Steve Jobs are all charismatic, but they feel different and they use different cues. And that's why we don't become robotic.
I love it. I love it. Such a robust explanation and just so great. I want to dig into your book. Cues is the name of the book. Small Signals, Incredible Impact. I've read it and it's awesome. But before we dig further in, I just want to kind of zoom out just for another minute longer, just to say, so at the top of the call, I mentioned that you're a recovering awkward person. You noticed in your career, you were feeling awkward and set out to resolve that for yourself. How do you go from that to making a career out of this? You know, you're like, I want to know some of that transition. You know, of course, for people listening who are like, maybe they have things that they're really passionate about that they're trying to solve in their own lives. And I think hearing how you've kind of navigated that space could be really interesting for folks.
Oh my, yes. And so funny. Never in a million years did I think that I would be teaching people skills as an awkward person. And actually, oddly, that was actually the spark that made our first videos go viral. So in the very beginning of my career, I always loved writing and I always knew I'd be a writer. And so what I was doing at the beginning of my career was just writing articles about everything I could think of. And I have a very unique interest, which is I love dry academic papers. I love reading dry academic papers. I don't know what it is about my brain, but I just love them. Ooh, the more jargon you got in there and I can parse it out, the better it is. So I was like, okay, well, I like reading science. I like reading research papers. Maybe I could, you know, take a paper that recently came out and then write about it for a popular blog. So back in the day, this was Huffington Post was the big, kind of the big, journalistic place where writers could submit articles. So I would take an article, I'd take a paper, I would submit an article and then I would get paid to write it. That was great. It was working really well. And I noticed that if I added a little bit of my own journey into the article, like a little self-experimenting, it did really well. It did better. So I would take an article that was about, and I, of course, because I was scratching my own itch, my favorite papers were the ones that were about interpersonal skills. So I loved the journals that were about social psychology, behavioral science. I was always looking for those articles. And so I would, for example, I think that one of the early experiments I tried was if you use different words, it will change behavior. Well, let's try it, right? So I think that it was a very simple idea where they basically said, I think this is a study from 2009. They said, if we add achievement-oriented words to directions, people do better. So in other words, they had people come into the lab, take a little math or intelligence test, and they had two sets of directions. The first set of directions was, please complete the following questions. You will be graded on a scale for your right and wrong answers. The second set of directions was almost exactly the same, except they swapped in achievement-oriented words. Achievement-oriented words are words like win, master, and succeed. So those directions said, see if you can master the questions below. Every winning answer will give you a point in the right direction. Right. So like same kind of feeling. But what they found was just swapping in a few achievement oriented words doubled participants' desire to keep working. So they spent double the amount of time and they also got more answers right. This is insane, right? Just reading a word like win could make you do better on an intelligence test.
It's wild.
So I took that study. And by the way, that was like a 15-page, very long paper that was behind a paywall so no one could even read it. I thought to myself, this is a great study and no one's going to read it. These yeah. researchers spent 3 years probably of their life, I don't actually know how long, researching. We should share it. So I was like, okay, I'm going to try this myself. I think at the time, social media was just starting. So I swapped out a couple of words on my profile to see if I would get more pokes. I think back in the day, people were poking people. Remember pokes. Those days? I'm like, yes. really dating myself now. I wanted to see if I could get pokes. More poke back, pokes back from strangers yes. if I added more warm and fuzzy words to my profile. And this yep. is a silly experiment. Yep. When I added more warm and fuzzy words to my profile, I got more pokes back from strangers. Wow. So that article was like, did extremely well. It was like trending on the website because of this little addition. I thought, wow, maybe if I start testing my own things, it will help. That morphed over the course of, I've been doing this work for 17 years, if you can believe it, into, wow, people, there's other awkward people out there and they really want the systems, but I have to try them first. And so that was sort of the genesis of how I started doing this for a living and that, and not hiding my awkwardness.
Yes. Yes. Thank you for that story. It's really, really fun to hear. And it's, you know, kind of scratching your own itch, one part kind of leaning into like this smarts, you know, your secret smarts and translating that to the general public, which it seems like a perfect segue into what you do now and what you're doing with this book, which is just so, so great. So much in here. Just to begin to talk a little bit more directly about the book that I've already applied to my own life. Specifically the competence and warmth.
Yes.
If you could just share that concept, then we can kind of dig in there. I can talk about how that's impacting me and my life.
Oh.
But yeah, tell me a little bit about the balance between those two areas.
I would love to hear how it impacts you. So this was one of those studies that I remember getting tingles when I was reading it. I know that's a very weird thing. Again, I love reading academic papers. So I got the tingles when I read this study. So this is a huge study. And by the way, it's been backed up many times, it's been replicated. So it's a great study for us to sort of serve as our foundation, which is, I always wondered what makes charismatic people charismatic, right? Like that was the fundamental question. It's like, I am not charismatic. I am awkward. How can I authentically be charismatic? What does Oprah, Ted Lasso, and Steve Jobs have, right? What is it that they're using? They look different. They sound different, but somehow they're all charismatic. Mm-hmm. So researcher, Dr. Susan Fiske, headed up this research. What she found was that highly charismatic people were drawn to, very quickly answered two questions. Can I trust you? And can I rely on you? That very highly charismatic people, what makes them charismatic is they rank off the charts in two specific traits, warmth and competence. That we love to be around people who at the very same time signal warmth, friendliness, openness, trust, likability, but at the same time, competence, power, memorability, efficiency. And so that balance is actually what makes us drawn to people. We like to be around people who are both trustworthy and can get it done. And so if that's a foundation, what we can then learn is, okay, if we know that very highly charismatic people are warm and competent, how do we learn the cues of warmth and competence? What are the nonverbal, verbal, vocal, and imagery cues that help us show warmth and competence?
I love it. It's fantastic. Am I right in understanding that like sometimes they're a little bit in opposition, right? That there's like a balance that you have to strike between the two. And so just to get into some of how this has impacted me personally, I tend to be very warm and I think very much lean into that specifically in my written communication. My emails, my text messages all have exclamation points, sometimes too many.
Oh, yes.
Lots of emojis.
Emojis and exclamation points are warm. Yes.
Yes. Yes. My wife, on the other hand, it's periods and, you know, very straightforward and just straight to the point that she's extraordinarily competent. She gets it done. And
there you go.
You know, everyone who knows her just knows that that's, you know, she's the kind of woman that when you have a problem, she can solve it. She solved that problem for
you. That's a great partnership, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Our partnership, we balance each other out really, really nicely. But then often, it probably goes more, I add a little bit of warmth into her communication when she's like, has especially a delicate issue she needs to communicate around. Like, she's like, hey, how does this sound? I was like, how about put an exclamation point here and a smiley face there, something like that. But I don't know, I guess maybe, I think my question was just about the balance, the balancing piece.
Yeah.
And maybe even for listeners, how do you know if you're going too far in one direction or the other? Because people, I think, will have their own natural tendency towards one direction or the other.
Yeah. So this is the key, is that we have to think of our warmth and competence like a dial, right? So like, it's like a thermostat in your home. Is you have cool and warm, right? Like literally that's how you can think of it. And very highly charismatic people are in control of when they want to be higher in warmth and when they want to be higher in competence. You always want to have a baseline of a little bit of both, but we can dial up in different needs. A very quick test, by the way, to know if you're warm or competent is if it's physically painful for you to add exclamation points, you're probably higher in competence. If you have to remove exclamation points after every sentence, you're probably higher in warmth. That's a very, very
yes,
that's quick
perfect.
Little litmus test for you. And
checks out for my marriage. Yes.
There you go. But, and also, by the way, we have a free little quiz on our website you're welcome to take. It's scienceequal.com/charisma. If you want to actually take the formal test, it's up for free. You can take it as many times as you want so that you can actually identify where you fall. It's also helpful if you do it with a partner or a colleague and have them take it as you. Because sometimes how we perceive ourselves is differently than how people we work with perceive us. So that can be a helpful check. Again, take it as many times as you want. It's up for free for that reason. So the balance is the key here. And most of us have an imbalance, a big imbalance. That's why charismatic people are so rare. They're those rare creatures because, wow, they have that perfect sweet spot. So what's important is to know, where do you default? So if you are higher in warmth, you need to work on purposely dialing up or sprinkling in competence to your recipes, right? Especially if you're in a negotiation, an interview, you want to be taken seriously. That's less important if you're with your kids or with your friends or with your partner. If you're high in competence, you need to specifically use warmth cues. And that's important for social interactions, when you're trying to be collaborative, when you're trying to get someone to open up. We can literally use these like a dial in our interactions, and it also helps us be much more in control and purposeful. A way to also test this is you can do a little email audit and look at your last five most important emails and count the number of warm cues versus competent cues. It's a little art, not science, but warm words are like the warm and fuzzies. So like happy, best, both, together, open, whereas competent words, as well as dollar signs, percents, charts, graphs, numbers, also efficient, productive, brainstorm, ready, onwards. All those words are more competent words. You can kind of very quickly see how you're coming across to others by doing that little email audit.
I love it. And that's another place where although I tend to be warm in most, especially my informal communication, a lot of my work stuff, I shoot that email off straight to the point, three sentences long. And I've been like, wait a minute, let's just say, hey, happy Monday. How was your weekend? And then get to it. You know, like, so even as a warm person, when I have a different hat on, I tend to just get straight to the point and maybe err on the other end of the spectrum.
One of the things that I have a whole section on verbal content of yes, you can add more, which is always great, right? You can always add an opener, add a closer. You also could just do really clever word swaps. So same word count, same speed, but a little bit more purposeful in our titling. For example, I do a lot of sales trainings, folks who have really great ideas, but have trouble pitching themselves, which is the cruelest place to be, right? When you know your idea is good. Entrepreneurs or sales folks who are like, oh, I hate answering the question, what do you do? Okay, so one thing you can think about is, let's take a sales example, is they'll often use the word proposal or pitch. Well, that word doesn't really mean anything to us, right? Like, it's sort of like, okay, great, I can't wait for that proposal. What if we could change it to just a different title, a title that works for us? So like, if it's an achievement-oriented word, because you're trying to trigger achievement and getting it done, maybe you call it 2022 wins. Right. Yeah. I have a plan for your 2022 wins instead of proposal.
Love it.
Or I have that goal document we were talking about. Yeah. You know, like, so I think that even just being more creative with those word swaps, it doesn't take many. It's not about adding 15 more words. It's about adding two or three right words. Remember that original study I talked about from 2009? That was a couple of words they sprinkled into directions. And so all these changes are really small but powerful. I know we are busy. We are burnt out. We don't have time to write, 100, 200 word count emails sometimes. Sometimes we just have two sentences. That's it. So the question is, what are the tiny tweaks we can make? Yes.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes. No one wants a long email.
No.
I love it.
No one does. And believe me, I really don't either. Tiny tweaks.
Yes. Tiny tweaks. Well, just along those lines, folks that are listening and, maybe they're thinking about applying for a new job or or just how they present themselves at work, maybe about going into an interview. Like, what are some of the low-hanging fruit, in addition to what we've already discussed so far? Like, what's some low-hanging fruit that we could just quickly offer folks of like, here's a few things that you can do to make sure that you're presenting yourself in the best way possible? In addition to reading your book, of course.
Of course. But like really quick, easy ones I want you to use now before you even have to pick up the book, which is one, your first impression matters. And the biggest mistake we make on video and in person is accidentally starting out in low power. So we'll be waiting in the waiting room for an interview, hunched over our phone, and our head is tilted down, our chin is tucked in, our arms are tightly to our sides. That first impression, that little snapshot when they open the door, you look like you're in shame. That is the universal position of shame when we're tucked. So while you're in the waiting room, before you hop on video, I want broad is the wrong word because I don't want you to like walking in like Rocky, you know, like that would be bad, but just maximizing your distance, like keeping your head up, having nice loose arms and your torso, not checking your phone in the first few seconds before the interview. That's actually going to help you both mentally as well as that first impression. Another little low hanging fruit thing is making sure that you are not too close to your camera, especially video calls. We often will like start off where it's just our head. And that actually is incredibly jarring from an interpersonal perspective. You want to be at least 18 inches away from your camera. So measure the distance between your nose and your camera and make sure it is at least 18 inches away. Really simple. That's going to immediately increase your trust. So the closer we are, we're like a digital close talker. And the last one I would say is the first 10 words out of your mouth should be positive or engaging. In other words, I think that a mistake that we make is we go, oh, hi, can you see me? Can you hear me? Which is okay. But I would rather you say, hey, it's so good to see you. And then if they can't see you, they'll say something, right? Like, same thing in person, right? Yeah. Like, we accidentally sometimes will start with like, oh, I'm so sorry I'm late. The traffic was terrible. Mm. No, thank you so much for waiting. It's so wonderful to be here.
I love that.
So those tiny swaps of just something positive, the first 10 words that you say are like the directions, and that's that research exercise, can you make them just slightly positive?
I love that. That is so fantastic. Well, I know we're coming up on our time here, and I feel like I could go on indefinitely with you because this is just such great stuff that you're doing. So fun. It's so fun. So thank you for writing this book. I'll make sure to link up to it in the show notes. But is there anything else in particular that you'd like to invite people to that want to follow along with your work and learn more about what you're up to?
Yes. Well, first of all, take the charisma quiz if you want to kind of see where you start. It's a great starting off point. And I read the Audible book. So if you're interested in the audiobooks and you like my vocal power, I do all kinds of fun voices. And also, I just want to thank everyone for your time. You know, I know you're very busy and you gave us a big chunk of time today. And I just want to thank you for being open-minded and maybe even starting to think about some new cues because they are super powerful. And I'm very grateful.
Thank you so much. It's been so fun, Vanessa. Really appreciate you coming on the show.
Oh, thank you.
Vanessa, thank you so much. That was so fun. Listeners, if you'd like to find out more about Vanessa and her work, you can find links to her books, her site, everything in our show notes at themeaningmovement.com/Vanessa. My team and I have been working so hard over the last few weeks to level up our game. We've got a great new season of episodes that we're in production for that's going to be coming your way, and a handful of other changes that I don't want you to miss. So if you have not joined the email list, please go to themeaningmovement.com and opt into any of the boxes around the site. There's all kinds of worksheets, resources, courses. I'd recommend that you start with the 5 Clues mini course, which is available at thecallingcourse.com, but there's tons of information, resources that we've made available totally free of charge for you to help you find more purpose in your life, in your work, to help you feel fulfilled and help you live a life that you love. So make sure to be on that email list so we can give you more good stuff for free. You won't be disappointed. Finally, if you have not left a rating and review for this show, please take a moment and do so. You can do that on Apple, you can do that on Amazon, and a handful of the other podcast catchers wherever you're listening. If there's a way to leave a rating and review, just ask that you take a moment to do that. That's how people like you find this show. Thank you in advance. I'm so excited for what we have in store coming your way soon. Our artwork is by Eliezer Ruiz. Our music is by Tom. Back with you soon.
And now another no-brainer money-saving tip from Progressive.
Marcus, what happened?
I was changing my oil and I spilled some on the floor.
Oh, well, use these $50 bills to wipe it up.
Perfect. Got any more?
Yeah, take a couple hundred.
Stop. Instead of using money, use an old rag. And here's a better tip from Progressive on how not to waste money. Don't pay too much for car insurance. Drivers who switch and save could save hundreds. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary.